Okay, welcome back to Pod on the Parish. This is episode 10, which is pretty cool. I've got Tom here today. Tom, you're looking very smart. What's going on with the... You're looking, done your hair and everything. Is that especially for me?
I have done it especially for you, yes, indeed. You know, I thought I had to look good for your podcast. Especially, it was number 10 as well, so big number. So big milestone,
well,
you know.
I'm going to disappoint you that the actual podcast is just audio, so they're not going to see your lovely haircut, your trim hair there.
Well, there you go, they're missing out, aren't they? So, you
know. Anyway, tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do? What's your full name?
I am Thomas, but only my grandmother ever called me Thomas, and that was when I was naughty. So what people normally call me is Tom Clay. I am the executive officer for a thing called Urnlicher, which is the East Riding and Northern Lincolnshire Local Council Association. So, and I've been doing that now for 4 years.
So what were you doing before that then? How long have you been in the local gov game?
Since forever. And I did,
really?
So for a long time. And I was I was a clerk for various different places. And I used to work for a unitary authority at one point, and then got into this world, and then eventually became the executive officer for a place that's got an acronym where if you put it into Word and ask it for autocorrect, it will come out as ear liquor. So, you know, I feel like I've reached the very pinnacle there, working for an organisation that's mistaken for ear liquor. So
is that on your CV, I hope?
On my business card is what it's on.
Yeah, good.
Is it Urnlicher or ear liquor is what it's, yeah, so.
You went to uni, did you?
I did, yes.
And what did you do?
I did politics. So I'm one of the few people who did a degree that sort of, like most people would believe, that doesn't lead to anything obvious. And actually, it's all about government, local government, you know, political theory, you know, governance practice, elections. And so I'm one of the few people who did a degree in something like politics who then actually went and did, you know, the work in that field. Yeah.
You're actually qualified.
Yeah, so yeah, by accident. I mean, I never planned any of this out. So yeah, so, yeah.
What was your first job then, straight out of uni?
The first job straight out of uni was I worked in my dad's, my dad was a manager in a factory. And I didn't have anything else to do. So my first job out of uni was working in his factory, cleaning things. I used to collect stuff called swarf, which is like horrible bits of metal that are razor sharp and put them into big bins. So, yeah.
So what were they making? Yeah, so it's all the cuttings on the floor. You're sweeping them all up.
Aircraft parts. So I used to package them up and then I did that for a while. And then slowly... worked full city council, and then my wife started training to be a nurse, and I had a lot of spare time because she was going off doing training, and I became a parish clerk, and then I thought I'd become a town clerk, and then one thing led to another, and then I ended up sort of at Urnlicher. So yeah, cool. That's the full story.
Do you miss your days of being a clerk, or do you prefer, you know, running a county association?
Being a clerk is one of the best and worst jobs I've ever had. You have some very high highs and some very low lows. There's bits of mist about it, but I really do enjoy my current job. I find it very fulfilling, helping people and helping lots of communities. I get to see a lot of East Riding and Northern Lincolnshire. And if I could just do a plug for anyone who's never been here, it's a lovely day out. Got loads of lovely attractions. So, you know.
You've got a good team there as well.
Yeah, and I've got a lot, yeah, like, yes, got a good team. So we work with Ruth, and we have great support from all the councillors and the member councils in our area. So, yeah.
Yes, always good team. You guys, good banter as well when we're at events. But, yeah, so everyone knows you quite well, particularly in that region. So is there something we don't know about you unrelated to your, your career?
Well, actually, you did send the questions like, oh, yeah, I was meant to think about this one. Tell you what... did you know that I can trace my ancestry back to Rollo Gangier, the first Duke of Normandy?
Oh, that is a good win. Mm. So have you got like a family tree?
A long family tree, but the most important fact is, did you know that one day I plan to get an army of Vikings together to reclaim my birthright and take over Normandy again?
You should do that.
That is indeed, yeah. I've got to find the time to get them all together. It's just, you know... Got a lot going on in Urnlicher. I don't have the time to get a load of Vikings together and some longships. But right. One day I'm going to go to Normandy, claim my birthright.
All right, I'm going to somehow link to the future of AI from that. How can I do it?
Well, I don't know. I haven't asked ChatGPT yet or anything else how I would
We
go
should
about
have.
assembling a long ship, but I'm sure it will be able to provide me with an answer. So,
It will do.
just I don't know whether it's going to get the team of people together to actually build the thing, but I'm sure it will tell me how to how a clinker-built hull works. So,
Yeah.
so lots of
It'll put a strategy for you together and it'll think it's awesome.
Oh, yeah, it'll tell me it's awesome, and but then it'll caveat it with loads of. Other people have tried this and sank.
Yes.
So,
Yeah.
we'll have to see. But yeah, so that's the thing that people don't know about me. Not only am I related to Rollo Gangir, Rollo the Walker, I also enjoy walking. So that's another family tradition we've kept up going. And but not only that, but I plan to go back and take Normandy one day. So
Good.
just got to find the time to do it.
No worries. It'll be a sort of evening, sort of weekend work. Anyway, so your so future of AI, that's a webinar we're going to slip into in a minute. We've got like 250 attendees. We've got quite a few speakers. We'll be introducing them later. But yeah, it's actually instigated from an article you wrote. So what while you seek advice. Yeah, tell me a little bit about background of that.
Okay, but I read an article on the BBC website about a guy who got, I think it's AI psychosis. I think I can't remember exactly what it was called. But basically, he believed everything that AI told him was going to happen. And I think if I recall correctly, it told him that his life story was going to get turned into a film and he'd be a multimillionaire and things like that. And I don't know, and then I was having a I sent it off to. One of the guys who I think will be joining us later, Danny Moody, and we just ended up throwing some things backwards and forwards. And I just remembered all these. I don't know why it's sort of all linked together, but I just remembered all these articles from 2020 talking about what life would be like after COVID. Imagining what would change, and I just sort of it sort of grew out of that. I was sort of thinking, well, this is a relatively new thing that will have a quite profound effect. What do we think will happen? And it's just basically it sort of grew from that, and I got in touch with some people who I knew were interested, or I thought might have some interesting views, and everyone very kindly agreed to contribute their sort of 2 pennies worth, and so we came up with this little selection of articles that I sort of hope drives a bit of debate, gets people thinking, allows, and in 10 years' time we can all look back and say, how wrong they were when our new robot overlords are, benevolently. Sort of reviewing documents I wrote in 2026. But no, I just thought it'd be a useful. I mean, dare I say, it, a bit of a fun, but also sort of fun exercise with a bit of a serious point.
Yeah, no, good. Awesome. Yeah, the waiting room is building up now. Let's jump in and start. Yeah, it's all right. Good morning, everybody. I hope you're all having a good day so far. Thanks for joining us today to discuss the future of AI. I'm super excited about this. We'll find out a bit about how that all came across in a minute when I hand over to Tom and we have a whole bunch of other speakers. But yeah, we're going to jump in for the main talk. So everyone's got like short, sharp talks, 5 minutes. So some of those collaborators on Tom's article speaking today. So I'll do it in the order of speaking. So we'll have Jonathan Owen, we all know him, chief exec of Nauk. Then we've got Danny Moody, we all know him. We actually know all of these people. We've got myself, Mark Thompson, Steve Walker, and Christian Vincent might make it. And Tom Clay's also going to, I think you're also doing another bit, aren't you, Tom? Are you?
I
On
will do
your
whatever you
views.
want me to do,
Yeah,
John.
your
So
views.
I'm at your
So,
disposal for an
but
hour.
everyone will
So,
also
yeah.
introduce themselves. So we'll jump into Jonathan Owen. How are you doing, Jonathan?
Hi, John. I'm doing well, thanks, and thanks for the invite to talk to you today.
No worries. We were hanging out last night, weren't we?
We were indeed. It was a great event, John, in the House of Lords, no less.
House of
And
Lords.
John was a star in a room of upper tier councillors and lords and other dignitaries. John was extolling the virtues of parish and town councils. It has to be said they all sort of rolled their eyes a bit or looked a little bit intrigued as to why you were holding forth, but you made a damn good case for why our sector is so important. So well done.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that, Jonathan. Anyway, cool. Let's talk about AI. Over to you, Jonathan.
Okay, well, thank you, and good morning, everybody. I'm going to talk about AI and the future of local democracy. I have no expertise in AI. I know nothing about processing or anything like that, but I'm interested in democracy and how AI will impact upon it. But we can't start today, can we, without just remembering that the World Cup, the Football World Cup, starts today. Isn't that brilliant? Hooray! And the question really is, are we pessimistic or optimistic about the chances of England or Scotland getting through to the the next stages, the knockout stages. I'm fortunate because I'm a Welshman, so I'm happily agnostic about who does prosper. But I think it's fair to say that pessimism and optimism shapes perceptions of the implications of AI for democracy as well. So let's start off with the negatives, the pessimists. Much of the public debate around artificial intelligence focuses on darker possibilities, a world of convincing misinformation, automated propaganda, deep fakes, social media bots that undermine trust in institutions and distort democratic debate. In that nightmare scenario, technology amplifies false narratives, and we see far too many of those at the moment, don't we? It makes it harder for citizens to distinguish fact from fiction and weakens confidence in public decision making. So that's the pessimist. But if we let the sunlight of optimism in, and by the way, Scotland have got through to the next rounds. England, I'm afraid, lost on penalties. But looking optimistically at AI, it's not inherently a threat to democracy. Like any powerful tool, its impact depends on how it's designed, governed, and used. For parish and town councils, the more immediate opportunity is to harness AI responsibly to strengthen local democracy, improve public engagement, and support better services for communities. So I'm just going to run through a few of the kind of key elements, I guess. And firstly, it's a practical opportunity for local councils, isn't it? At a local level, it can strengthen democracy rather than weaken it. By automating routine tasks, managing documents and correspondence, it frees up time for councillors, clerks, and council staff. And that enables them to refocus their effort. It's not about replacing people, it's about freeing them to focus on what matters most so they can concentrate on community leadership, place shaping, engaging with communities and residents, and local priorities. I think AI can improve engagement and participation too, and make local democracy more accessible. And again, I think that's something that's absolutely vital at the moment. And it can do that through better communication, clearer, simpler information for residents, faster responses to inquiries. Residents are often complaining about how slow local government and local democracy is. AI can speed all that up. It can increase participation by having easier ways to engage with decisions, a more inclusive public consultation, better insights, analysing feedback from residents, identifying emerging local concerns. And the outcome of all that is more informed local debate, stronger community involvement, and greater trust in local decision making. I think it can also help empower small councils. Small councils, as we know, are the bulk of our sector, and they have some real significant resource constraints. And I think AI can help them do more with less, streamline processes, and improve services. So again, examples would be analysing consultation responses, managing administrative workflows, and responding more quickly to community needs. So they'll be more responsive, efficient, and accountable councils. I think AI can help strengthen the voice of local councils. It can help them tell their story better. And that's particularly important at a national level. It's very difficult to get the message across about local councils when there are 10,000 of them doing lots of different things. We have very little data about them, but AI could actually generate much better knowledge and facts that we can use in discussions with government, ministers, and others. And that can be sort of paralleled at a local level as well in terms of getting a better insights about what residents want. So looking ahead, I think also AI can help potentially access more funding and improving the management of assets. At the moment, we have a difficult story to tell to other agencies about what we do. But actually, if you think of all the things that our sector does and how it contributes to health and well-being, tackling loneliness, place shaping, and other things, if we use AI to maybe identify the value of all the trees in our parks, how we build community cohesion by having events and so forth, then we can probably make the case more strongly to other sectors about our importance and why they should invest in them. So I think if used responsibly, AI will make democracy more accessible, it'll improve transparency and engagement, and it will strengthen local leadership. So AI will not weaken local democracy, it can help secure its future. And finally, come on, Scotland. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you, Jonathan. But yes, so we'll be doing Q&A at the end, like you're hooking there to the football. Good work there, Jonathan. So we're going to jump over to Danny Moody. How are you doing, Danny? Actually, is
I'm
Danny
doing
there? Oh, yeah,
extremely
it
well,
is.
thanks, John.
Yes. Good, good. Good to see you. Yeah, so fire away, Danny.
Thanks. So I'm Danny Moody, Chief Executive of the Northamptonshire County Association of Local Councils. So good morning to everybody. Good morning, particularly to the clerks and councillors from Northamptonshire that are joining. And hello to
the delegate from Newton Abbott that spoke earlier on. Congratulations on your Silver LCAS Award. And as an ex-student of Seal Hayne College, I apologise unreservedly for anything that happened in Newton Abbott in the late 1980s. So potentially I'm going to take a slightly different line to some of the usual optimism around AI, because I don't think it's true that AI will only be a benefit to parish and town councils. I think we have to accept that in some cases it will replace people in the system and cause some new difficulties that don't exist yet. And in Northamptonshire, we can already see how that might happen. So there are clerks to councils in Northamptonshire that don't live anywhere near Northamptonshire. They live outside the county, in one case, even outside the country. And they're serving their councils entirely digitally. So email most of the time, phone, they're attending council meetings remotely. So the role of clerk that they're doing is done entirely digitally. Once you accept that a clerkship, and I'm probably talking about sub £25,000 councils here now, once you accept that a clerkship can operate fully through a screen like we're doing today, you have to accept the next step. And that is that if a role is fully digital, then in large part, it can be automated. I mean, you think that I'm a human speaking to you now, but you don't actually know that. I could be a video that has been pre-recorded. I'm not, I am a human. But if a role can be done entirely through a screen, we shouldn't assume that it will always need a person to be on the other side of the screen. Now, I'm not saying that to be alarmist. I'm saying it because we're already there. We're already partway there for sure. And I'm not saying that clerks or councillors will necessarily disappear, but I am saying that the shape of those roles will change quite dramatically over the next 10 years, which is what we're talking about today. What does AI look like in 10 years' time? What do councils look like in 10 years' time? And I'm saying the shape of the role of clerk and councillor will change quite dramatically over that period of time. Because a lot of what we call the clerk's job today, you know, the basic parts of a clerk's job, drafting agendas, producing minutes, responding to inquiries, those are exactly the sorts of tasks that AI already does really well at. Yes, it makes mistakes sometimes. Show me a human that doesn't ever make mistakes. So AI is already really good at that kind of administrative aspects of the clerk's role. At the same time, we're seeing that AI is changing the environment that parish and town councils operate in, because guess what? It's not only clerks and councillors and councils that have AI, it's residents now as well. And they can generate well-structured complaints. We're seeing a massive increase in FOI requests, Freedom of Information requests, being sent to parish and town councils. And they can generate really challenging emails in seconds. So a clerk can spend an hour carefully crafting a response to an inquiry from a member of the public, whiz it off by email, and literally 2 minutes later could receive a three-page response from the member of the public with yet more arguments and questions, all generated using AI. So that shifts the balance. Councils are no longer the only ones with access to the knowledge and advice from their county associations. Members of the public have that too. And that's empowering, potentially, but also really quite challenging in the way that parish and town councils engage with those members of the public. Then there's an issue that, for me, we're not talking about enough in the sector, and that's burnout. And many of you will have heard me say already that if there's something that used to take an hour that now can be done in 5 minutes using AI, that we're just not going to be using the rest of the time for blue sky thinking and strategic planning and community engagement and all those wonderful things that we would love to have more time to do. We're just going to do 11 more pressing tasks. There are so many things to do. There are so many tasks to do within a parish council that if you can do one quickly, the time that that frees up, you just use it to do more tasks. So instead of easing pressure, AI risks just accelerating everything and exhausting people even further. I think remote meetings and online meetings have done that to an extent since COVID. And I think AI is just going to massively accelerate that. So for me, that forces a bigger question, which is, what are clerks and counselors actually for? Because if AI takes care of the process, the administration, the basic tasks, for me, what's left is judgment and leadership and connection to place, the things that AI isn't very good at the moment. So AI can draft a policy, but it can't yet fully understand your parish, or it can summarize a legal position for you, but it can't yet weigh the personal relationships and the local context behind a decision that your council's making. So I don't think AI yet replaces local democracy, but it will strip out everything from our roles as clerks and councillors and county associations that isn't genuinely human. And that's going to reshape those roles, whether we like it or not. So for me, the challenge for the sector isn't whether to use AI. That's already been answered. You must use AI. You're going to fall behind if you don't. It's how we redefine the human roles in the system around what humans do best. And if we get this right, if we get that element of it right, then AI won't diminish parish and town councils. It'll actually empower them and make them better. So it will take away the noise and leave us with what really matters, what humans are good at, which is the judgment and the leadership and the place shaping. So just to finish, I mean, none of us on this call, none of the speakers, none of us really know what's going to happen in the next 10 years. But we do know that it's going to be quite radical. And that's why I think conversations like this one that we're having today are so important. And thanks to the people that convened it, because in my view, we have to drive the change, not be overcome by it. Thank you, John.
Excellent. Yeah, excellent. Thank you, Danny. Really good angles there. Really, yeah. So you're not a clone. So
Really not.
I don't know yet. So I've just asked Gemini to I said, how do I know someone's actually on a video call? So there's a few tests we need to do. Physical actions. Ask the person to turn 90 degrees, full head side. Wave a hand in front of the face. There we go. That looks, is it real? Wave a hand in front of the face, pinch their cheek. So these are real
John.
things. This is honestly, so we've seen it on, it's been on viral. Some of these things have gone viral where you will have to do these things. You will have to do these things. I get cold calls all the time. And now it's funny. I ask, so this does sound very good, but it does sound like an AI. So I've questioned, and I've realized it's an AI. But yes, we are going to need to do these things. It's going to be really difficult, if it's fully digital, knowing these things. But yeah, it's awesome. Okay, thanks. Right, I'm going to move on. I'm actually doing a short piece. I'm doing a day in the life of, let me bring up my screen share. I've actually got a couple of slides. So I'll show you how I created the slides. Am I sharing the right screen? Oh, desktop. What am I doing? Yes, so this is the article that we were talking about that Tom produced with all the different collaborations. So I just took my part of it. I wrote a piece on there and I threw it into Gamma.app. Gamma.app is a great tool. It's like Canva, can produce presentations. So I've done a one shot. I haven't actually edited anything. So it's turned my little bit into slides. So I've done 10 years on. Actually, I would say this is going to be probably the case in a few years' time, but a day in life of a clerk budgeting for their precept. So let's move on. So rethinking local council budget, setting your budget. So I'm going to leave the mistakes in there, so you can already see that image there, all produced. She's got three hands, so three arms. So that's already a warning. AI still doesn't get it right. You always do need to check these things. So I could have edited that out, but I kept that in there. So the current sort of when you're setting your precept, the current workflow is, the setup. You have to. You've got a lot of information in front of you. It's spreadsheets. It's post-it notes. It's invoices and all these kinds of things. You got multiple information sources, and you're just trying to pull everything together, as well as looking at reviewing price increases and all that, kind of information to put some kind of budget together. So you'll find, this is budget season, September, October, November into December. A lot of clerks or RFOs will be spending days trying to work this information out to bring it to council. How that will look in the future. So you guys will be familiar with this scene, but how that will look in the future. A much happier clerk there. A lot of this will be automated by agents that will work for you, and you'll just effectively get a nice presented dashboard of your expenditure last year. And it'll put all the kind of levers in place to work out your budget for next year. And how that will happen, some simple agents will be working for you. So you'll like have an energy agent that'll go off, look at what you've been your energy consumption or your bills over the whole year that you're actually using across, let's say, your buildings, and look at the look at the market, what's available for you, go make inquiries at different suppliers, and then come back with a plan for you about maybe switching suppliers, how much you could save going forward, and you'll review this decision. You'll have a maintenance agent would look at that again, look at all your contractors that you're using to maintain your community assets, your parks, your playgrounds, your buildings, etc., and then go off, get quotes, and come back with you. And then there'll be a scenario agent that kind of brings this all together and basically gives you a dashboard there that you saw with that clerk that kind of enables you to kind of make a decision and share that with the further people. So 2025, all paper, lots of monitors, sticky notes, manual cross-checking, creating a very rigid first draft, so it's hard to kind of model different scenarios, and then it's more of a defensive-based meetings. 2035, you have an AI financial system. It's all reconciled. You have all these agents going off, looking at all the data, going outside, querying the marketplace, let's say, of suppliers, and then you have live action and insights, which you can then model and play around with. It's not fixed. You can play with all those different levers to kind of decide on your budget. So it's going from currently when you're doing budgeting, you're very much focused more on the rules and the compliance side of it. But then when you have all this information, you can just make more focus on collaboration. Very much, again, what Danny was saying there, more on the human side. All the kind of data-based stuff is taken away from you, and you can just focus on like the outcomes of what you're trying to do for your community. So that's my kind of little insight into what budgeting might look like in 10 years' time. So now I'm going to jump over to Mark.
Hi John, how are you going? All right. Thanks very much
Yeah,
for the
all right.
invite. Yeah.
No worries,
All
dude.
right. Okay. So, everybody, I'm Mark Tompkins. I'm from Aubergine. You may or may not know Aubergine. We're the website people. We build compliant, accessible websites for parish and town councils. We live in a world of tech. So I have a possibly a slightly alternative view. Although I live in the world of tech, we live in the world of tech. I have a slightly alternate view on AI, or certainly what AI is at the moment. If you're as old as I am, you'll remember the advent of the desktop computer into the office. You'll remember when smartphones first appeared, and the naysayers at the time almost certainly said, "Oh, this is going to get rid of jobs. This is going to change everybody's life for the positive or the negative, depending on which side of the fence you sat." Well, those times have passed. Did the desktop computer get rid of people's jobs? Did it change human race for the negative? We wouldn't be having this call if it wasn't for the desktop computer. The same question goes for smartphones as well. But AI, as it stands right now, is a tool. It is a tool to be used, no different to a hammer or a saw or a smartphone. I think as it stands right now, there is a little bit of a concern about AI and its overtaking things. AI isn't a sci-fi overlord. Actually, you know what? We think it behaves more like a naughty teenager. Think about it. You've brought AI into the council office, and it talks the talk. It looks like it's going to do a good game, but if you leave it unsupervised, chaos. you only have to refer to the analogy of show me a picture of wild salmon and it shows five pieces of salmon fillet floating along a river. Well, there's lots of those sorts of things. Now, as other speakers have said, things go wrong, but things can also go well, but it needs oversight. It is a tool. Within the website world, within the accessibility and the compliance world, where we see the future are the repetitive tasks. Because fundamentally, I think if we are all genuinely honest, we are lazy. Humans are lazy. That's why we make tools. The thing is, what we don't want is that hammer or that smartphone or a piece of AI software becoming the master. We make the tools to save us time. So in my particular world, when it comes to websites and searching and tools for people with disabilities, it is great to a point. AI tools can technically check whether a website meets the technical specification of WCAG 2.2AA compliance. It makes sure that that pixel is there and that piece is there. But let's not ignore the human aspect. Because fundamentally, humans use computers, humans use the internet. Otherwise, if we give up to it, then essentially we've got computers talking to computers, and that truly is game over. Or as referred to in The Terminator, it's Skynet. We aren't there. We need to look at these sorts of things as helpful time savers, a fast start. And that's where I think most folk are with using AI. It's a fast start. It's a time saver. Read through all of these 5-page, 10-page meeting notes and summarize for them. Because in brackets, you know what? I'm lazy. I'm a lazy human. I'm not going to read 5 pages. Just give me the headlines. The problem is, as I'm sure everybody will have experienced, AIs, left without guardrails, hallucinate. They make stuff up. And they make stuff up because their source of information is the internet. The internet is full of rubbish. So guardrails are a really important key thing. So when you are, if you are making your AI tools to help you with your meeting document reviews and helping you use an AI tool to create finance planning, make sure that they've got lots and lots of guardrails. Only use this particular place as a source of information. Because if you don't set the boundaries, if you don't set the guardrails, it will hallucinate. It will make stuff up because, well, like my teenager analogy, that's what they do. They make stuff up. So going back to the human element, and where does this fit in with websites and compliance and people with disabilities? You can use it as a tool. The AI tools that we at Aubergine use, we use it purely to go through the repetitive tasks of making sure that things are built to a defined standard. But then we move past it. Then we look at it from a human perspective, because an AI bot, no matter how clever, cannot possibly replicate how a person with a disability, perhaps a reading difficulty, perhaps a learning disability, perhaps a physical disability, they cannot possibly replicate how somebody might navigate through a website, read a piece of text, perceive it, understand it or not. That can only be done at the human level. So whilst we have this beautiful and amazing and inspiring tool that is definitely going to make us more lazy, definitely, what it might do, much like Danny quite rightly said earlier on, is it might, if we're clever and if we're smart, allow ourselves the time to have that blue sky thinking, as Danny referred to it, that creative thinking that only humans have. Because we have this tool, and it's important not to get the tool to lead us. We are still the controllers of that tool, but it definitely will save us time. And perhaps the future really is one of the most amazing opportunities in front of us to give us back that creative thinking time. Because those repetitive tasks that tire human minds, tire human bodies, can be managed by an AI piece of software so that we can be more creative thinking, we can be more empathic in the way that we view something. So does AI look like the future of taking over lots of website controls? Some bits of it. The repetitive tasks, the defined areas of code that can be checked, the tool, as long as it's given guardrails, do this, don't do that, we'll stick to those guardrails. But like my teenager analogy, left unchecked, well, it will behave like a teenager. And that's where we come in. We are the parents of this teenager. So the future, certainly within my world of websites and accessibility compliance, is we are using it as a helpful tool. It is a time-saving tool so that we can focus on the human elements to improve the human experience.
Awesome.
Thank you, John.
Thanks for your, thanks for that, Mark. So we've got Steve, Christian, and Tom coming up next. Also, just a reminder, we've got 19 minutes left on this webinar. We do want a time for Q&A. So remember to try and keep it succinct. So over to you, Steve.
Thank you very much. Well, I will be very, very quick. I hope a lot of you know me from my role at Cloud IT and have seen me. My first thing to say on the penultimate day of Local Council Clerk Week is this to all the clerks that work in the sector. As a member myself, it's clerks that, you know, that you are the engine room of the council. And that leads me on to this from what everybody said, Mark and Danny and Jonathan as well. You know, how many of us, you know, from a clerk's perspective, were working last Tuesday evening and the Tuesday before that at night? So what if in 10 years' time you didn't need to be giving up your evenings to sit and manage meetings? You know, that's the whole conversation, isn't it? You know, John showed us in the slide 10 years. But I want to challenge that 10 years. I don't think some of this is 10 years away. I think for some councils, this is already here now. I think tomorrow is today. Almost. And when I wrote this piece for the collection, you know, I said AI would simply become part of everyday tools that everybody uses in local government. And I think all of the speakers before me have said exactly the same thing. It's just another tool. And it's there to ease your workload rather than replacing people doing all of those admin tasks that automation can work with. I still believe that. But today I want to push that, you know, a little bit further. You know, if we look at a typical council meeting, officers that are present there and spend their time looking at procedural notes, maybe looking information up, answering the chair's questions, minuting and so forth. That's a lot of scaffolding. We could probably hand that off to something to help with that. Does it replace democracy? Does it replace the clerk? Does it replace members? But it sits there quietly and it assists that clerk. So whether that clerk is there, and I think Danny said earlier about the clerk's role shifting, you know, and everyone said it, you know, really well, both in the collection and today. Clerks becoming managers of information systems, overseeing the tools that they have, and most importantly, and Mark made this point very well, validating its output. You've got to look at that. Becoming less transactional and more strategic. And the next step along the road is, if procedural scaffolding can be handled digitally, does the clerk need to be physically present at every meeting? So looking forward in time, maybe not at every meeting, maybe they participate remotely. We know that worked through COVID, and we certainly know that it's working now. Maybe they're on call rather than in the room. And that matters for practical reasons, doesn't it? You know, and it doesn't get said loud enough. Every meeting is one of the biggest consumers of times, isn't it? If you've had a long, busy day in the office, you've got all of these evening meetings, you know, especially if you've got responsibilities, those naughty teenage kids that Mark said we all have to look after, or very demanding day jobs. If AIs in some form can handle those procedure formalities in the room, the clerk becomes a supervisor of that. They're present, but they don't have to be physically there. And I think that's a meaningful change in people's lives. You know, it's not a trivial efficiency gain. It's a quality of life question. And again, you know, I want to be honest about the limits here. Sensitive matters, HR and good governance disputes are all really important. And they need that human angle. They need us to consider that. And not every decision would be replaced by machines. I think that's the important bit about democracy. And Danny put it really, really well. You know, the adoption must be thoughtful, inclusive, and value-driven in the collection. And I absolutely agree with that completely. But here's where I land. AI won't empty council chambers, meeting rooms, the debates, the decisions, and that connection with community. That will all be human, and it will always remain human. But it does mean that you valued clerks, you could probably get home for dinner before 9 p.m. So honestly, you know, after everything that clerks give to the sector, I think that's a pretty decent place to start. And again, as I said, especially today as we celebrate Local Council Clerk Week, if there is a tool that can help you rebalance those long, hard days, good. I think it's for the good of the sector. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you, Steve. AI will help you get home before dinner. Awesome. That'll be a strapline for you. I'm gonna, Christian, you've just rocked up. So we've got Christian and Tom. Again, yeah, if you could keep it within a few minutes, that would be great. Your insights. Christian, are you there?
I was thinking this morning about a modern advent, which is the voice note, used a lot by the millennial generation and sending things to people. If you haven't seen it before, it's like sending a voicemail to someone, but they don't have the choice of listening to it. It's kind of there. And that for me, I was reflecting on because we've moved from a culture where we talk with people to a culture where we talk at people. And I want to use that in terms of our general reflections on AI, because we've got court cases now in America where the lawyers are using ChatGPT to file a brief, file a counter brief, file a counter counter brief, and file a counter counter brief. And we're seeing that a lot within the council sector, whereby a lot of the stuff you're seeing, whether through social media, through complaints, through public engagement, and often in the employment space, is coming from AI in the first instance. And the worry that I have is when we use AI to talk, AI to listen, and AI to respond. In the first instance, it seems quite engaging, quite helpful, and it can be. But after a while, we end up deviating further and further to some of the downsides of AI, which can become a little impersonable, and in the HR sense, completely made up. So my advice is, as with anything, AI can be hyper-powered. It can draft your CV. It can prepare a brief. It can think about how to respond to stuff. It can read information, distill it, identify key threads for your review. But when you take the person out of the AI, is when at best we start to lose, as I've previously said, the soul of what we do. But at worst, we lose the person. Clerks have got the hardest job. You've got to balance a thousand things at the same time and be an expert on everything when you just can't be. And AI can be a very helpful way of getting a starter into something. But the most important thing, as ever, and as I'm sure will have been said by many, many others, when you rely on it as a source of truth, that's when things start to go wrong. I've noticed some people talking about privacy and other questions with regards to AI. A lot of this stuff you should deal with within your policies, within practical steps, just to ensure you've got the right safeguards in place. And if you have the right safeguards in place, it can be transformational. If you don't have the right safeguards in place, you might be okay, but you just might not. You asked for me to be pithy. Back to you, John.
That is perfect, Christian. Nice one. I like it. Finally, let's go to Tom. Final wrap.
Yeah, thank you, John. Thank you, everyone who else has contributed. I'm not going to go over my sort of entire article. I'll just quickly respond to sort of what's been said today. I think the tool analogy that's been used many times is a good one. I think it can be used and misused, AI, and it will be guaranteed. for good and for bad. Some people use it for good. Some people use it for bad. My take on how profound its effect will be is slightly nuanced by our sector's quite small C conservative. So I personally think that that will act as a drag factor on adoption of AI and take up of it more generally. We also have quite limited budgets, particularly at smaller councils. And I think there's technical skills. I mean, many small councils at the moment can't do literally what we're doing now. Live stream a meeting, which, is a fairly commonplace thing. They don't have Wi-Fi, the clerk doesn't have the technical skills, things like that. I personally think that particularly at the sort of certainly sub 25K councils, but maybe under the 100K ones, AI will be used sort of patchily to help do reports and minutes and things like that. But I think in a sort of more sophisticated sense, it probably be slightly underutilized. However, automation will be a massive thing, as we've already discussed. Going back to Mark's guardrails comments, I think they're really interesting. And what it makes me think of the most is of social media. And if we remember sort of well, more than 15 years ago now, but when social sort of media first came out, there was people just using it without sort of really thinking about it. And it took quite a while for those social norms, those guardrails, those things to come into practice. And I mean, I still wouldn't say they're fully embedded now, but we're sort of getting there as a society, understanding the sort of do's and don'ts of it. And I just feel AI will be a similar thing. It'll be a learning process, and we won't have all the answers, ready baked in from the start. And then I noticed that some people were sort of saying, coming up with some sort of like practical tips for today and for use today. I mean, my one big thing would be, if you're using AI to create policies now today, make sure that they actually speak well to all your other policies. Don't just assume that what it creates for you is golden. And you have to remember that if you're asking it to do it without giving it any sort of specific guidelines, it will just go off over the internet and trawl around and collect whatever it finds, which may or may not be good and may or may not work with all your other policies. So don't just use the thing that it's created for you in 20 seconds and hope for the best. Actually read through and make sure that your sort of new safeguarding policy or whatever it is speaks to all your other existing policies, because you may end up in a situation where you find out that the thing it's created for you doesn't actually work with anything else that you already have in place. And I'm starting to see that already, people using AI and then forgetting to actually read the thing that they've got AI to make and just assume that it's just will work from day one. It probably won't. Or it might not, is probably a better way of putting it. So yeah, I said I'd keep things brief, John. That's the best I can do to quickly summarize, give you some Q&A time.
Excellent. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, all the speakers. It's really good. I mean, we didn't really orchestrate all the topics as such. We obviously had the baseline article, but everyone's given their different angles. I really appreciate it. It's actually really worked well, everyone's insights. There's been a bit of chat. I have summarized it with Gemini. There's been some questions in there. So I'm going to ask a simple question. Someone can anyone can answer it, even any of the audience, but also the panel. This is a simple one. Do we need to state on a bit of content or email to the public that we've used AI? So whenever you produce content, whether that's an email, news article, do you feel like you need to include there that the author is AI?
If I may, John, I actually
Yes, Tom.
did this on the collection of articles. And you know what? I never even thought why I did it. I specifically said, all this is from a human. And I don't know why I did it. So the thing that brought us here today, I actually sort of said, we're from, it was created by humans. But from my perspective, I'd want to be clear on where information came from. And I'd want to be, and as you were joking with Danny earlier, you want to know whether something has been sort of generated by a machine or whether it's, an original human concept or whatever the term would be. I mean, I'm not just talking from a legal sense, I'm talking from a just a sort of general, it's nice to know the difference sense.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, AI, yeah, it's like, yeah. Mark, drop in.
We are the masters, not AI. And so we don't send an email at the bottom of email saying this email was created by a computer. We know it was created by a computer, but we as humans had oversight and editorial control. I don't think that we need to cite something is written by
No.
AI unless we have not checked it. And that is the fundamental aspect. If we are going to commit to it and not check it, great, give yourself a caveat that says this was written by AI. It could be completely made up. But everything should go through a human, and therefore you do not need that caveat.
Yeah, I agree because in a way, we've had autocomplete for ages. You wouldn't say I used spell checker or autocomplete on this, but yeah, if it's fully automated, I think there. So, any other want to chime in on that? Otherwise, I'm going to go on to the next question. Cool. Right. How do councils protect their data if they are feeding it into AI platforms? If that AI platform is not based in the UK, how does this meet GDPR regulations? And how do we know where the information goes? Shall I give that one to you, Steve?
Or do you know, I was hoping I could dodge that. Yes, there are huge privacy concerns over the off-the-shelf platforms. Once you put data into that, and anyone who has used some of these systems, you have no control over that data, where that goes, where that ends up, how it's used in training or shared with other platforms. You don't have any control over that. And if John, if you can give me a little bit of leverage, there is a UK-based one. And that would help you. I won't mention it directly, but there are platforms that are hosted here and are compliant around that, because again, that's one of our huge concerns, isn't it? What happens to resident data, and where is resident data being used? And these free platforms, even down to Claude, Gemini, ChatGPT, again, most of it is done offshore. Most of it is done abroad.
Can
Can
I
I just add?
push?
I'm going to add something to this. Right. Does
Go on, Mark.
anybody check where your piece of data goes through when you send an email from person to person?
That's what I was
Nobody
going to
does.
say.
Nobody
Yes.
questions. You send an email, you have full and faith in it. It leaves your computer, it goes off to Microsoft, it goes to Cupertino, it goes to Apple, it goes to BT, it goes back. Nobody goes, this is a GDPR nightmare. We
Yes.
just ignore it and trust it. And as it stands right now with AI, we're in the same boat.
Yeah.
So the basic rule of thumb is if you have got personal identifiable information that is genuinely sensitive, don't share it openly.
Yeah, I think it's like, I think the AI thing has created a scare when it's been the case forever. It doesn't even matter if you're using online Google Docs or Office 365, any kind of cloud-based tool, they've got terms and conditions in it. You know, so AI is no different. It's nothing special. It's just a cloud service. Yeah, and, you know, you can just read the terms and conditions on it. You know, yeah, if you're on a free plan for most AI tools, it does say that it will use it for training. Like all kinds of free plans on any kind of cloud service, there'll be kind of, you know, different terms and conditions on there. You know, if you're on a paid plan for AI chat tools, it will say we don't use it for training. So it doesn't make any, you know, Mark used the classic example of email, you know. So I feel like it's used... I don't know why people started freaking out about AI. Because it's no
with
it's
email,
cloud.
Aren't they?
It's cloud service. It's a cloud service. You know.
Excellent. That was a great event. Thank you, Tom. Enjoyed that. It all started from you writing that article. So, like, if you had to zoom out a little bit, what one thing would you want listeners to remember? You know, from if you could wrap it up, it's a bit of a difficult one.
Just single sentence change. Well, not only is it coming, it has arrived. You know, so start to think about how you can get the most from AI, start to think about how your council could benefit, start to think about the things that, you know, that would be of use to your community, to your council, you know, and just recognise that that change is here, and embracing it is probably one of the best way forwards.
Yeah, that's good. I heard this a quote once. It's like, up until you're 16 to 18, years old, change is what it is. It's normal. Then between 18 and like 40, change is kind of exciting. And then above 40, it's scary. You know, that's kind of the attitude, but that is it. Yeah. Right. We're going to go back to you because we always want to know a little bit more about. So we talked earlier about you. I was asking you how you started out. You went to university, did politics. So I want you to set the scene for the 18-year-old Tom. What was he thinking? What was he doing at that point in time?
He was probably thinking at the time, I should just go, like a lot of people of my age, I should go off and get a degree without having a real plan of action. And if I could go back to that 18-year-old Tom, I'd probably say to him, get a job in AI research and development. linking back to what we were discussing earlier. I mean, that would probably be the most sensible thing the 18-year-old Tom could have done in hindsight, in retrospect. But
what year was that?
18. Oh, so when did I start university? 2002.
So, 2002, yeah. It would have been, yeah, machine learning, I guess, early doors, linear regression and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, maybe.
Yeah, all that stuff that you said that I still don't know anything about, that's the sort of stuff that young Tom should have been looking at and earning money off. Yeah,
I don't know. Well, I always, you know, literally a few years ago, I used to tell people, get into tech, it's a job for life. Software engineering, you know, Gary. But now I just cannot believe now I'm telling young people, you know, become a tradesman, you know, or something like that. You know, it's more safe. But anyway, that's your advice to yourself. 2002, you get this old boy rock up and tell you to get into AI.
I wouldn't have listened to me. not only are we talking in hindsight here, we can't travel back in time, but even if I could travel back in time, all that money would be a waste on the technology that we developed the time machine with, because the 18-year-old me would have told me to go away.
Yes. Okay, so we also have the pay it forward question, so where we ask the last guest to leave a question for the next guest and so on. So Jamie Charters from CCLA asked a really good question. I like this one. What is the skill or attribute you have developed that you have benefited from the most?
Do you want a serious answer? The ability to quickly and accurately complete forms. That has honestly got me so far. I mean, I know it sounds like a really dull thing, but the ability to whack out a form, fill out quickly, and not get it sent back, you know, with any sort of, I tell you what, it is. It not only is it saving me loads of time, loads of effort, but it also gives you a great sense of achievement.
I need that skill because I'm like the amount of time when I was we got an Innovate UK grant for Civically, and I added weeks. to the lead, you know, because I've missed something and then I got the date wrong and then you have to have the specific date.
And I love a bit of bureaucracy, you know. It's
Yes.
and there's a, there's if anyone has ever seen a DLA form, Disability Living Allowance form, it is a work of art. It's 72 pages of question after question after question, all of which are open to interpretation,
Yeah, so
and a
you're
hundred odd pages worth of guidance.
yeah, you love it.
But the ability
My
to quickly and accurately complete forms is probably my top skill.
cool. My colleague Jane, she loves a form. She loves filling. So whenever we have forms, she says, oh, "I'll fill it out." Yeah, she loves it. Anyway, so what is your question for the next guest?
I know you sent me an email, and I should have probably given this a bit more thought, and I didn't. But now, I mean, just as we were speaking, a thought's come up in my mind, which is I've been re recently been doing a sort of house clearance for an elderly relative, and we suddenly discovered that there's money that they've left everywhere. And I think this is something that many people do. So, you know, just thinking riffing on that, my question for your next one would be, if you were going to bury treasure, what would you bury, and where would you bury it? Is that an acceptable question?
That is a great one. A great one. I
Can I
like
make a
it.
caveat as well on it, which is that it has to be like real treasure, not like a picture of a family or, like a thing saying the real treasure's in your heart or something like that. It has to be like a real thing, you know, like
So you've got to think about the end user, the person discovering that
exactly, yeah.
treasure. It's got to be treasure.
It can't
It's
just be like
like
a bit of philosophy, like, you know, you can't look forwards if you're always going backwards or something like that. It's got to be like a real thing, yeah. Is that okay?
perfect. All right. Anyway, we're going to wrap this up now. Tom, thanks for
Well,
joining us
thank
today.
you.
Thanks for putting this whole AI kind of re this kind of a insights together. And yeah, have a good day.
You too. Thank you very much.